QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater, 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club for the use of the repeater for this net. More information on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club can be found at bbarc.org. That's bbarc.org. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. All right, hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. All right, one announcement I have this evening, Mike WB6CLZ will not be with us this evening, and his mother passed away earlier this week, like last couple of days, and anyway, so he's got a lot of things to tend to. Not going to join in with us this evening. So, Mike and Cindy, all our condolences from all of us out here at Tech Tuesday. All right, the topic for this evening will be pulled out of April QST. This is kind of a build-it project, pretty cool. And as we really have no way of showing schematics over the radio, we'll talk about the project and what it does and how it works and a lot of cool features about it. This is an over-voltage protection for AC generators. It's on page 43 of the April QST of this year. And actually, this was done previously way back in June of 1994. Electronics was a little bit different, so they've kind of upgraded this pretty neat, so we'll get into detail of that in just a second. Pretty cool, especially if you're going to run equipment off of a generator. All right, so before we get started, let's do our brief roster here. And I know Mike and Cindy are not going to be out there, so we're going to kind of bypass them this evening here. And that'll put KA6CIA George top of the list this evening from Lucerne Valley.
Good evening, Tom, K6CIA.
And good evening there, George. Good to hear you out there this evening, and good seeing you this morning, although brief, over there at the club breakfast, so good to see you there. Next on my list here, I have KJ6HCS Mike. And nothing heard there. How about WA6ITC Rod?
Yeah, from Lake Williams, WA6ITC.
And good evening there, Rod. Good to see you also this morning. Unfortunately, we didn't have much time to chat. All right, next I have KJ6FIL, Mike.
Good afternoon, all. KJ6FIL.
And good afternoon and evening, whatever may apply there, Mike. Glad to have you out there from Redlands. Thanks for checking in. Next, I have a gentleman who will help me this evening with Tech Tuesday, and great help lately, KJ6, KDL Jim.
KJ6, KDL here with KDK.
All right, Jim, Rosemary, glad to have you both out there. Appreciate you checking in and helping with Tech Tuesday, as you have lately. We're going to keep you on the roster here as a permanent fixture co-host. All right, next I have KI6IQA Kelly. And nothing heard there. How about K9AOG Steven?
Other than that, this is K9AOG, Stephen in Long Beach.
Yeah, good evening there, Stephen. Glad to have you out there. Next, I have K6GVL Ron from Green Valley. Yeah, nothing out there so far from Ron. How about AD6PL Harold from Riverside?
Good evening, AD6PL.
Yeah, good evening there, Harold. I want to talk to you about something here. I think this is something you suggested earlier, but good to have you out there. Something that you mentioned for some time back, it's going to pop up again this evening with our topic. At least I think it was you. Anyway, all right, we'll give you credit. Let's see if he's out there. Haven't heard him in a while. How about K6LCS Quinn? And I've heard from Clint. How about KJ6PYV Dave?
Good evening, Tom and Annette. KJ6PYV.
And good evening there, Dave. Glad to have you out there. Next, I have W6JLM Judith and W6KMM Ken. And nothing heard from them. How about K2BBL Allen from Moonridge?
Greetings from Moonridge. This is Allen, K2BBL.
And good evening there, Allen. Glad you could join us again. Next, I have K6YNW Chris from Palm Desert area.
Good evening, K6YNW.
And good evening there, Chris. Glad to have you out there. Next, I have W6POO Chip. And nothing heard out there. How about KD6LAN Bill?
Yes, sir. I'd be here. KD6LAN.
All right, Bill. Glad to have you out there and checking in this evening. Let's see here. Kind of skipping around a little bit. How about Ron, WA6HF from Eastern Big Bear? Yeah, there from Ron. How about WA6DLB Donna? And nothing heard. How about NQ7RD Rick? Nothing heard there. Let's see, moving on to the second page here. Next I have AE6CK Victor.
Good evening, Tom and Vanette. Victor, Santa Fe Springs.
And good evening there, Victor. Glad to have you out there. Appreciate you checking in. Next I have KA6ROD Rod, Moonridge.
I'm here. And Dave, I got your book still if you want it back. KA6ROD.
Rod, I know which book that is. Are you ready to test yet?
I'm having a hard time, a really hard time. I bet you it's going to take me 6 more months, but I'm trying.
All right, Rod, good deal. Stick with it. Don't give up. You'll do it. All right, next I have W6JET, Rob.
Internet, W6JET.
And good evening there, Rob. Glad to have you out there. How about KJ6RAY, Ray? Oh, you might be mobile this evening. All right, well, that pretty much does the list, the ragged one I have here. Anybody else that I have missed or would like to check in this evening, please come back to KF6Q.
KE6TLT.
TLT, glad to have you out there. I know you've checked in before. Glad you could join us again. Anybody else?
E6QI, good evening.
Very white.
All right, we got two people in there. First, I had I believe it was KE6QI. Nancy, glad to have you out there. And also, we have Ray, glad to have you out there also. I know you normally check in regularly anyway, so I'm glad to have you both out there. Anybody else?
Lima Charlie Sierra.
In 7WNO.
All right, Lima Charlie Sierra, I called you, and now you're there. Appreciate that. Glad to have you back there, Clint. And I'm sorry, the last station there I did not get. Please come back one more time.
And 7WNO.
And 7WNO, glad to have you with us this evening, and hopefully you can join us each Tuesday. Anybody else? All right, well, I think we got everybody logged in here, and appreciate all the guests this evening, and pretty cool stuff we do here. Well, anyway, Jim's going to help me co-host this evening, so we don't really have Mike's usual sunset report and all that. But I will, just real quick, I don't know if he's ready for this, but I'm going to ask Clint, K6LCS. Clint, is there anything new out there in the satellite horizon that you can think of? Share with us.
Good evening. The only easy-to-work FM bird we have left in VHF-UHF mode is SO50, SO50 for those daylight passes. But there's a bunch of things being launched from Great Britain, Asia, and India. There's lots of things being set up that we'll be able to monitor with, better than your stock duck. Get a little handheld Yagi or a little hand-built beam. So there's going to be a few exciting things to monitor and decode some of its packet information coming down. And AO-27 went down 3 months ago and hasn't come back up. So listen for it. Don't take that one out of your programming scheme. Listen for that one still. That's all I've got. Nothing exciting. K6LCS.
Well, Clint, appreciate that update. And we have missed all your information over the last few months. Actually, quite a while here. So glad to have you back in there, at least for this evening. And please join us every chance you get. All right, well, good deal. This evening, what we're going to talk about is a really cool article. And if you ever have worked mobile or you're out there, you're planning to be out there for field day, a lot of us run off of generators. If you're running field day from your house, then this really isn't an issue, generally. And I say that with a little grin. Generators, what can happen is they can actually get into a runaway mode. There's a little governor regulator on there. It generally keeps them in balance. It's a mechanical thing, so mechanical things can stick and foul up. And when they do, and they have done this, what happens is we get a lot more than 120 volts coming out. So the problem with that is most of our gear, even if we have a power supply or whatever, power supplies knock that down. And of course, if they start to go out, then they overvoltage. Next thing you know, we got a big, big mess, chain of events. Well, anyway, Jim, you pointed this out to me. It's a very cool article. We were looking at this actually a week or two ago that I'd come through this. Good article by Jerry Paquette, I believe, WB8IOW, and pretty neat. This is page 43, again, on the April QST. Jim, you want to just give a general description of the information of this, just as a starter, get us rolling on this. Back to you, Jim, KJ6KDL.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Yeah, this is something that I've always been worried about, and that is when you generate your own electricity, like a portable generator, that portable generator doesn't have the complexity of a main power station. So chances are, and I've always wondered about this, there's a possibility that the power coming out of that generator may not be clean at all times. What if the motor starts sputtering and stalling or takes off and goes into runaway mode and goes into higher RPMs than you expected? There has to be some sort of regulation on the nicer ones, but what if yours isn't so nice? Or what if something fails and that thing does something bad and throws a lot of high voltage down the line? Most of our gear is pretty forgiving, has some pretty good voltage ranges that it will operate in. But at the same time, if you go beyond that range, then you can burn up equipment. So how do you know when that's happening? You're sitting at the radio and you're doing your contesting. You're not watching the generator. So what if it takes off on you? Wouldn't it be nice to have something that could automatically do that? All right, I think I'll stop for now. Back to you, Tom.
You know, that's actually a very good thing, and most of us know that if you're on the HF bands, an HF radio itself, there's not too many out there that are much under $500, and a lot of them are $1,000 and up. And even if they are being powered by a power supply that's between that and the generator, the problem is that power supply also can fail from the overvoltage, and then it creates issues in there. And some of this stuff can happen. It might have a fuse that'll blow, and it might do this, and it might do that eventually. But what we need is something that's going to trigger immediately. And that's what this guy has here, and it's kind of, there was another article about this, like I said, back in 1994, June of QST, quite a while back. So just kind of like a little update here, and let me reset here. And what he has done here is take advantage of a GFI outlet. Pretty cool. If you've ever seen these, or you have these in your house, generally they're around anything that's water. Or things that are operated outside. The GFI, pretty cool thing, will actually save your life. Because what it will do is before the current, enough that can kill you, can shock you, it'll actually shut down electronically and kill the circuit. And it can be reset with a little push button. That's the cool part. So it goes off at a very, very slight imbalance, and it'll cut the power, and that's what he's based this on. Well, Jim, that's the heart of this thing, and then he's used one device here. It's pretty cool. There's little LEDs, because I know that a lot of the listeners out there can't see the article we're looking at. I've seen these in stereo equipment, right? It's the same thing, like a volume, showing the volume with these stair-stepped LEDs. Tell us about that, Jim.
Exactly, Tom, and I actually built one of those kits a long time ago. Actually had it in my car. It got wrecked and got sold off, but that's another story. So this is what they call a decade op-amp device, and it has 10 little op-amps in it, all separated by a stack of 1K ohm resistors. And so that means that in incrementing steps, each LED will come on at an even rate, assuming all the resistors are identical, and this is on a chip substrate, so they're pretty much guaranteed to be very, very close. And so what he's done is he's used this as a voltage monitor. Now, this can be set in dot or bar graph mode, and I guess some people like to do the bar graph. If you can see the article, this guy Jerry Paquette has done is he's put 7 of the 10 LEDs in action. He's not using all of them. And what he's done is he's created 3 LEDs in the middle that are green, and that's the acceptable range, what he considers acceptable range of voltage, and it can drift up and down slightly. And then if you go under voltage, a lot of us know if you drop voltage, you increase current, and that can be bad. He has a yellow warning LED and then a red for very bad, and the same for the over voltage. Yellow and then red. So you've got some sort of gauge to give you a rough idea of where you're at. Now this is what he did that's really unique. And what he needs to do is do the equivalent of pushing that little red test button that trips the circuit automatically. So what he has done is he's used an optical TRIAC SCR device. It uses an optical LED for line isolation. And you can pass as much as 800 volts between these two pins that you pass your current through. Well, normally, without the LED lit, it's a very, very high resistance. If that last LED lights for that maximum voltage, it will light the LED inside this little optocoupler and, in effect, push the button and break the circuit and shut your computer down or whatever's on your device will shut this down. So, yeah, it turns off your equipment, but it doesn't burn it up.
And KF6Q, Tech Tuesday in the group, every Tuesday that we can. Well, that's pretty cool, Jim. So essentially, when this TRIAC fires or triggers or whatever from that last LED of the little scale device there, it basically, from what I see here, it pretty much just puts a short, not a dead short, actually runs it through a resistor, but it only takes, I think it's around 5 milliamps, 5 thousandths of an amp, very, very small amount of current. So he doesn't need a lot of current there. And once he trips this you know, your GFCI outlet, well, there you go. Doesn't take much, and it trips it off, and it protects your stuff. How cool. Very cool. So, kind of simple, very basic, but he's used different parts to come up with this, and come up with something very buildable. Probably, I don't know, less than $10 worth of parts as a guess, but that's just a shot from the hip. And that's pretty cool. And Jim, we're going to get into basically some other features here that he's also brought in line, but I think that's pretty neat. And Jim, with the GFI outlet being pretty available, I know they've come down in price. And can I get that at a basic hardware store or a lumber yard or something?
Oh, you bet. You could probably go to True Value, Home Depot, and Lowe's, obviously. Very easy to spot. These things have they're usually flat-faced, and they have a little black button for reset and a red button for test. And they will say on there, usually GFCI. There's another model that's not quite as popular, and another ground fault interrupter, and I forget what the acronym is for that. But this one is GFCI. That thing is very sensitive. I had one of my stepsister actually shorted out her curling iron one day leaning over the sink, and that thing saved her life. She got a nice burn on her finger, but it only lasted about a quarter of a second. So, yeah, these things work.
Yeah, and a quarter of a second's probably an exact, I mean, in our time frame, I know these things shut down so fast. It's measured in milliseconds, and yeah, it's a lifesaver, and that's good. And they're actually required by code in a lot of circumstances now, have been for decades, but of course, back in the day, they weren't around. Well, one very cool thing, the TRIAC, of course, everybody knows TRIAC, what is that? TRIACs are basically the heart of a dimmer switch. Essentially, by controlling one thing, you can control whatever you plug into the dimmer up to a certain amount of wattage or whatever, and that's pretty much it, the heart of that. Pretty unique device. This TRIAC is real special because it's actually triggered by an optocoupler, all built into one. So basically, it just isolates that, so there's nothing going to be connected to that high voltage line. So, and that's all cool. Well, one thing here is, of course, all these projects, and let me reset here real quick. A lot of these projects that are in QST and 73 magazine and all kinds of other magazines out there, they have printed circuit boards. And if you've never built one or never done that, it can be a little bit intimidating. But I think this was brought up by Harold some time back. But if I'm wrong, Harold, oh well, I'm going to give you credit anyway. But a website at Far Circuits. And you can get there by exactly that, farcircuits.net. And they actually have and make the printed circuits that show up in all of these QSTs and other electronic magazines going way back. And I mean way back. Jim, have you ever done any research? I've got their website up here. Have you ever looked at their website at all? Just back to you real quick.
No, I haven't. I was about to type them in with one hand when you called me in, because I did not know they did all of the circuits, so I just learned something myself.
And what they have, also they'll accept any other PC board in the normal, as far as templates and whatever, that are like EagleCAD and all those that are out there. But this is pretty cool, because if you've seen it in QST or any other electronics magazine, they probably have it. They have literally a huge site. The good news is that they're not real expensive. And we're talking anywhere from $5 to maybe $10, $12, a little bit more if there's three board sets, two board sets. But basically, very cheap and a little bit of shipping. And they've already made these. They've done all the work for you. All you have to do is order it, and you get the board. Not sure if they come pre-drilled, but either way, I think they do. But with that said, you can get the parts through your local Mauser, DigiKey, Newark, Allied, a lot of places, Parts Express, Jamico, a lot of these places. They all carry these parts, real simple parts to get. And solder them up, and you're good to go. Because the printed circuit board, just about everything we have ever had in our electronics experience over the last, what, maybe 20, 30 years. It's pretty much on a PC board, so it keeps everything organized. Pretty cool. So let me reset. So I say the good part about them, and there's other companies out there that do the same thing. We're just bringing them up because actually they were mentioned and I guess evidently used here in this article. Another really cool thing, if you want to design stuff and you want a little designing program that's essentially free, you can check out TinyCAD. It's on SourceForge.net. Just basically Google up TinyCAD. Really cool stuff. Really simple and free CAD program. So, and that's what I think he used here to do a lot of his design. And you can actually do your own circuit board. A lot of stuff out there is free. Believe it or not, the old acronym, if it's free, you get what you paid for. However, that's not necessarily true anymore. A lot of this stuff is free and excellent stuff. So, Jim, anything else to add with that? Please come back to me, KF6Q here, and then we'll take some questions in a minute.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking around on the Far Circuits website, and so far I don't see it up there yet. Maybe the date that in the article he says by the time of this publication, Far Circuits would have this up. Because we're on a subscription, we're getting these early. So it is only April 9th, so we have to give him a few more weeks here and see if he pulls the circuit boards up. But they're only a few dollars, and that's when I look at the parts. An LM3914 bar graph chip is like $2.35, and the optocoupler chip was like almost half that. So this is not an expensive circuit. The most expensive thing will probably be a toss-up between the power cord and the GFCI. There are some that are inexpensive, and he did mention in here that he has used $5 GFCIs and gone all the way up to hospital grade industrial at almost $60 each, and he personally has not seen any difference except if you flip over to page 46. He did note that he had a power transmission problem on HF 75 meters at 100 watts. His would trip, and he bought a new GFCI socket and put it in, and the problem went away. So that so far is the only thing I've seen that might be an issue, but it's a minor issue.
You know, and that's, like I say, there's a lot of stuff out there that we do take for granted. I know a little bit of research. We haven't done this on Tech Tuesday, but Astron Power Supplies and even Pyramids and a lot of others out there, they're just borderline. They could also do some overvoltage stuff just by parts going out of them. And there are some protection circuits out there. We haven't covered that. Maybe we can get back into that as we get closer to field day. That's very important. If you've got, you know, $500, $800, $1,000 in that piece of ham gear that you're using for field day, what a bummer if it blows from something stupid like an overvoltage. So that's not going to work. So anyway, this is pretty cool, and it's basic. It's very affordable. The parts are simple, easy to come by. Like I say, the PC board can be ordered. I think it's, I didn't see it on there, but another thing too is all the PC boards that are in the ARRL handbook and in QST and QEX and all that are available on the ARRL site. So, and if you can't get to it, that's probably because you're not a member. Okay, so you got to join the ARRL. So, another great detail. They'll give you the mask, the photo mask, you download it, print it out, burn your own board. You know what, Jim, too, I don't know if you know this, but they have supplies there for making your PC board. So this guy's pretty much wide open. He'll do one for you. He's already got it burned for you, or he'll give you all the parts to do it, you know, all for a very reasonable price. So anyway, anybody out there, any questions or adds to that, please come back to KF6Q.
Yes?
Kellyanne.
Okay, we had three people out there, and we'll start first with Harold, and I think we had LCS and then LAN. So let's start with you, Harold. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Tom. If you design your own circuits and send all the information to FAR, they'll build your boards for you also. And, you know, like, I guess, from one to however many you want, and the more you buy one thing, the cheaper it gets. And a lot of things that, when I was getting QST, I noticed that other people that were getting it would read the article, and then they'd run around asking everybody, we're going to find these parts, and if you read the stuff in italics down at the bottom, it tells you where you can order all of it at one time per kit, or where you can order the boards, which is where I found out about PAR, or, you know, the suppliers that carry the various parts that the person who wrote the article has dealt with. So it pays to read what you really didn't plan on reading a lot of times, and you get some good information. 86 bill.
Yeah, I think that's what's usually under the notes. They have all those sub-notes down there at the end, and we always say, oh, there's nothing there. Well, yeah, there's a lot there. There's all the stuff that you were trying to find out. Very good point. Thanks, Harold. Appreciate that. I think I'm going to hand it over to, I believe it was LCS. Quint, go ahead.
Okay, 6LCS. The optocoupler and that last LED, that last one at the top, is there a physical connection, or is that optocoupler literally just picking up the illumination from that LED?
You know, I think what he's got there on that last LED, he actually has an LED, but he's also driving that LED and the internal one at the same time, because it looks like they're all in series. So basically that last LED, which lights up red, so you can say, hey, wait a minute, okay, we're in the danger zone, and at the same time it triggers, that one's triggered a little extra load on the chip, but I'm sure it handles it well. And then that internal LED, the optocoupler, which is in line with that, also flips the switch. So, yeah, I think they're coupled internally, electrically, and, the internal part is the only part that's optocoupled. Hope that answered your question. I hope I didn't sound too confusing there. Then I had another one in there. LAN, go ahead.
Presuming that this is all about running a radio off of a generator, whether it be 12 volt or 120, there's for the 120 section, there are power strips out there now that you can buy that are GFI protected, so you don't have to build anything, and some of them even give guarantees up to, I don't know, $10,000-$20,000 if something goes bad or it gets burned up because of the power strip failing is guaranteed. The other thing I wanted to bring up along with this is that you need to make sure if you're running your radios off of a generator that the generator isn't emitting static like on the old generators on a car would put static out over the air or on your radio. You want to make sure that your generator is protected or your radio is protected from your generator. KD6LAN.
Yeah, a good point there. Yeah, and I think we have actually, for the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club field days we've had in the last few years, very typical. Usually grab the power strips out of the computer room and off we go. And they do also work. They're handy. So this is actually just another way to make an individual device. And the cool part about it, though, is the bar graph or the little LEDs, which you don't get with everything else. Kind of like Jim said, you've got the undervoltage indicators there, and you've got the overvoltage. So you go, oh, wait a minute. Okay, so, I mean, if you're kind of getting out of the green area and into the yellow area either way, let you know, because you really don't even know that. Not that it matters, I guess, but it's good information. So it's kind of cool, neat little thing there. And as far as it triggering and protecting your gear, like we've said in the past, any bit of extra protection is really going to help. So, this is pretty cool. This is good stuff. So anyway, good article, good information here. There's many ways to skin the cat, as they say, but this is another one here, and he's published this very, very pretty simple circuit, easy to build, and pretty cool. Any other questions? And hopefully I've answered those that you've asked, but please come back to KF62.
KJ6RAY.
Yes, Ray, go ahead.
Yeah, you know that many ham radio operators, or even the not ham radio operators, they don't know what the wave does the generator give out. It's not the sine wave, what we usually have in our circuits in the house AC lines are all sine waves, and this hurts. This can hurt the radio also. So what I did, I have a sine wave converter plugged into the generator, and the output, I put it to a automatic voltage regulator and to my regulated power supply to the radio.
Oh, that's a very good point there, too. I think in the last few years, too, some of the newer, what they call inverter generators, basically have done that. They essentially are generating a voltage or whatever they do is AC, whether it's an alternator to DC, and then from DC back to an inverter to get that pure sine wave. Yeah, they call them, and this is really what a play on words, they call it a modified sine wave, which essentially isn't a sine wave at all. It's like a square wave. And that's bad, because actually what happens, and a good thing you pointed out there, Ray, the sine wave in your house, we call it 120 volts, and it's not really. The peaks are actually way up there around RMS sine wave. It basically, I think your peak's up around 160 volts. So if you had a square wave and you didn't have a sine wave, it's 160 volts, period. So that's not good. And if it's 120 volt square wave, that's not good. So a lot of good stuff there. Very good point there to watch out. Make sure that you're getting some kind of a pure signal in there. If you doubt there's any problem with that, if you know somebody with an oscilloscope that knows how to hook it up, you can always hook that puppy up there and check it out, see what you can see. So good point. Very good point, Rick. Anybody else out there, any questions or comments?
10-7-W-9.
Yes, go ahead.
Can you set it up so that it would trip for low or high voltage? It doesn't sound, it sounds like it only does high voltage.
Well, essentially what he has here, and this is, keep in mind these LEDs are set up as a stair step, so the first one would be lit if it was a low voltage, and of course it's up there in the right zone, it's the middle ones which are green. Essentially what he's done is taking the upper high end and also running through this TRIAC optocoupler part number MOC3083M. And if you didn't get that, please look at the article. Anyway, so a very simple modification to this circuit would be to actually also put one in series with the low voltage, and then you'd have exactly that. If it went under voltage, it would trip, and if it went over voltage, it would trip. So that would be very doable, and that's a very good point there. A little small modification, and if you have the QST article, you might want to, usually they have their email addresses here from all the authors here at QST. And you could always send him that. He could, if you had any doubts, you could always ask him, but I'm sure that's what he would recommend. So, very good point. Very good point. Anybody else out there, questions or comments?
E.T.
Ah, that sounds like Rob.
Yeah, W6JET. Well, the best thing to do if you're doing a field day, something like that, and you're running a generator, you should always have a voltmeter set up next to your HF. We did a lot of, a bunch of us guys, and would go out, but we would be on battery most of the time, and the generators would be back up to charge the batteries up, but most of the batteries were run a weekend. We had some big deep cycle batteries, so we didn't use the generator as much. It was a lot quieter that way, but it's a good idea. We had even a little setup where we had the voltage and we had a current monitor so we could tell how much we were drawing out of the batteries or a power supply at home here. I use my power supply to charge my batteries, so if the power goes out, I can see how the lights go out in the house, but the radios will still operate. So there's all kinds of different ways there. W6JET.
Oh, that's a very good point there. Yeah, using actually batteries as the interim in between there, and actually if, you know, if you had a problem, that would solve that. Well, Jim, I'm going to throw this back to Jim real quick. We had a little episode up here in Big Bear, I'm going to say about a week ago or so, and I think it was about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I think we've all had that happen where the power goes out and you wake up and, you know, all the clocks in the house, if they're digital, are blinking with the wrong time. Well, that happened here, and of course reset, you know, what needed to be reset. And, of course, the computers, if they have one that runs all night long, and basically it just essentially it reset. But, Jim, you had some very special monitoring equipment because of your job. Basically, power didn't go out. What happened? Yeah, if you want to let us know about that.
Yeah, Tom, that was a good lead-in. And now I'd like to talk about the idea of stacking two of those 3083s on top of each other and lifting a pin and intercepting the low voltage red so that you can trip on both high and low voltage, so that was already covered. What I have is actually have some professional grade battery backup units, UPS units, on my home entertainment system and my server and workstations, and it actually does real-time logging, and so I looked in the history, and we actually had an over-voltage condition, and at a certain voltage, some stuff tripped. So we had our gas range as an electric section for the auto start and the timers, and that had reset, and we had another piece of equipment in the house where the clock lost its timing and reset as if it was unplugged, but it didn't get damaged, luckily. So that brings up another point, and that is what Bill was alluding to, LAN, is that power strips have some EMI and EMF circuitry inside to handle noise and spikes, but they really are not voltage regulators. And what this is trying to do is this circuit is trying to intercept voltage swings that are going to result in damage. And I do agree that adding that extra MOC for the low voltage trip is a really good idea. But what I've done is I've actually picked up a voltage regulating power strip. It's a brick. It's a transformer isolation. It claims to do sine wave. I have to see that. I would like to plug it in and test it. It was only $28 on Newegg, and Amazon has it too. For anybody interested, it's a company called OptiUPS, OPTI-UPS. Mine is called the SS-SAM-SAM-1200, and they actually have a 2,000 volt amp version that will actually boost low voltage and buck high voltage, and if it goes beyond its range, it's supposed to trip. So I would actually like to put that in line with this on a generator and see if there's a way to actually try to clean up some of the generator voltage before this circuit comes in, and still use it as a failover in case everything else goes wrong. Safety is good, and this is not very expensive for safety. I would say $30 unless you have to buy a really fancy box.
Yeah, very good point there. You know, and here's one thing which has actually vanished. You don't see it much anymore, but back in the 1980s you would. And used to run across a lot of this. I think I have one, in fact, that was being thrown in the trash. Basically, it cleans up your line voltage, and it's no more than basically a transformer. It's 120 volts in and 120 volts out. But in the interim, they're using the inductor of a transformer tends to really smooth out a lot of those spikes. That part of the transformer acts like a choke, kind of smooths that out. Not sure whether there's anything else internal to that, but essentially, they were very commonplace back in the 80s. A lot of computer equipment, very sensitive to stuff like that. It's really not so much immune today, but it's just really a lot better equipment today. And what that would do is it was basically a toroid, because it's a very highly efficient transformer, wound 420 volts in, 120 volts out. I'm not sure if they still are available. The cool part is, though, is that they're pretty simple, and they're rated how much power they'll have. They're not going to trip on overvoltage or undervoltage, but part of what Ray was saying there and cleaning up, making a sine wave, they will. They'll help clean that up. They're not going to do 100% of it, but it used to be used years ago with very, very sensitive equipment. So that's just another thing out there. So, but don't see too many of them around. I know they're still out there, just don't see them used that much anymore. Any other comments or questions for Tech Tuesday and the net? Please come back.
86 PL.
Yes, Harold, go ahead.
Yeah, give Mac Electronics down in San Bernardino a call. If it's available, they probably have it in the store. 86 PL.
Yeah, no doubt. Mac, we have it. You know, another place, too, if you're in the Riverside area, there's an electronics warehouse, and then they have next door, Electronics Warehouse 2, number 2, I believe. Anyway, what that is actually a little mini surplus store. You know, they do buyouts and different things, and you never know what you're going to find in there, seriously. Very economical stuff, a lot of power supplies, a lot of this, a lot of that. Little small store, both of them side by side on Main Street, just about a half mile south of the 60 freeway. So another very good place. Anybody else out there? Any questions or comments?
You just remind me of something, Tom.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, the last time I was in there, over in the warehouse too, they had a huge bunch of sealed lead acid batteries. They're little small jobbers. They're 12 volt. And they looked like they were really high quality. They were, I think some of them were Panasonic. I'm not sure what the others were. They had several different brands, several different sizes even, which makes a nice little portable battery pack if you can find an old ammo belt or something that you can modify and drop those in and wire it up, as long as Homeland Security don't see you. You can cart them around, you know, a whole bunch of them in a sack, and have your good power supply for a good long while, because they're fairly high amp power, 86 PL.
Yeah, I know there's a station out there trying to get in, but you're not quite getting into the repeater, so I'm not sure if that's, just keep trying, maybe you'll get in there. Well, you know, Harold, that is a very good point, and one thing they do, and you don't see too many surplus stores around anymore in the electronics industry, used to be quite a few. The very cool part is they do buyouts and liquidations, and they'll get a lot of this stuff. Some of those could have been actual units for UPS units, perfectly fine. Probably have a little time on the shelf life, but never been used. And the cool part is they have them very economically priced. Not sure if Orvac still has. They used to have a whole section on stuff like that down there in Fullerton, and they're on Orangethorpe, I believe, just west of State College. And they have a little area there, but a lot of this stuff is shrinking. And you know, so it's local area, Southern California. They're still out there. A couple up in the valley. Huge place called Apex. Google Apex with electronics, and you're going to find a very huge store up there. I'm going to say just barely north of Glendale, actually northwest of Glendale. So that's a pretty cool one. So a lot of good stuff. Any other questions or comments, please come back. KS6Q. All right, well, good deal. Jim, I think it's a pretty cool thing there. Like I said, there's many ways to do this. This is just one more way. And it was in this month's issue of QST. If you don't have it, subscribe to ARRL and they'll send it to you for about $39 a year. Best investment you're going to make. So pretty neat stuff. And, of course, we never, ever get all the articles covered. Well, Jim, as co-host, anything else to add to this evening before we get close to closing down Tech Tuesday and our overvoltage protection?
Yeah, just one more thing to add in, and that's something I already alluded to, is if you're willing to spend the money, because these things that we've been mentioning so far have been inexpensive, an automatic voltage regulating battery backup UPS unit, some of the larger ones, when you get over 700, 800 volt amps, I've got some 1500 volt amp units, they have pure sine wave generation and battery backup as well as voltage regulation. So if you really want to be as close to fully redundant 99 point whatever percent uptime, if you were to put one of these in line, and granted they are heavy and expensive, you could actually safely shut down a generator to refuel, and people would flip the battery for a short period of time until you started the thing back up, and it would automatically kick in. Plus, if you're using a computer to track your contests, you could actually plug in an interface cable to that local computer and track the voltage. But the big thing is on this one kit here is you don't have to look. It does it for you. It might surprise you and shut your stuff down, but it's saving it from getting damaged. You don't have to look at a voltmeter. You don't have to listen to the generator. You don't have to be staring at a piece of equipment and pushing the button yourself. It does it for you, and that's the cool thing. Back to you, Tom.
You know, and I really think probably one of the coolest things is that if somebody wanted to be creative and has got a little engineering or technician style mental ability going there and physical ability, think about this. Here's a really cool thing to design, work on, or whatever, or maybe there's something already out there like that. Basically a plug-in module going right on the generator itself that does all that, basically cleans it up, turns it into a clean sine wave, using a little electronics trickery, as we all know, works just fine. And basically doing all these functions and just put it right on the generator and go from there, and then wouldn't that be cool? So I myself, I've got an old 5kW construction generator, good old hardy thing, and I have no idea what the waveform coming out of that thing looks like, but we have run field day off of it. We've run some stuff off of it, and it works, but never really looked at that, and it probably isn't, I probably don't want to know. But that would be kind of cool, so there's always something, and if you get creative, you know, looking into that stuff, there's probably a lot of plug-and-play stuff out there for parts. That's essentially what this guy has done here, so who knows, maybe you can get your item published out there in QST. So a lot of room out there for design, and a lot of times it doesn't take a lot, it just takes a little thinking, a little ingenuity, a little research, and by golly, you'll come up with something that will be in the magazine. We'll talk right here on Tech Tuesday. So let me reset. So with that all said and done, basically, we're going to call it an evening for Tech Tuesday. I want to thank everybody who checked in this evening and participated, and all those who just listened in. Always glad to have you with us out there. Thanks for all the guests who checked in this evening. And, of course, as always, we'll be back here next Tuesday, always looking for something really interesting, something that's really going to help us on whether it's day-to-day or field day or anything else with ham radio. So always a whole lot of fun. So I appreciate everybody from joining in, but we'll call it an evening for tonight. And with a QST, 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 this is Tom Fry, KF6Q, Net Control, for Tech Tuesday. Great thanks to Jim for helping, and condolences to Mike. Sorry about his mishap out there, but that is what happens with life. And I know he will move forward and be with us next week, so. Everybody, please come back and join us again next Tuesday, right here, same time, at K6BB with Tech Tuesday. Return the repeater back to normal use. K6. KF6Q.